You're listening to the Changing Safety Podcast with Paul Clark.
Welcome, welcome everybody. This is Paul Clark, the owner and director of HSE Global Series, and you're listening to the Changing Safety Podcast. So this is a bi-weekly podcast dedicated to challenging the safety narrative by championing different ideas and selling different as a movement to bring innovation and real change to the profession. Let's think outside the box together and have the confidence to do things differently. We're absolutely delighted today to have Brian Long. He's down in Australia as we speak, and we're going to be talking about how safety needs to be more dynamic, and as a profession, not making it seen as a particular niche, less soapboxing and more what needs to be done to keep people safe. Wonderful. It's great to have Brian Long here on the Changing Safety Podcast. Brian, we haven't seen each other, spoke for quite some time now. I actually think it was pre-COVID, or no, it was actually during COVID when we did the Australian virtual event that we did. God, blimey, that seems like decades ago now. But how have you been?
Yeah, pretty good, Paul. A lot of water under the bridge, as you say, since then. But enjoying things at the moment, doing what I need to do in terms of work, but also doing a bit of study and self-development, which is always important. So can't complain. Things are good.
Good man. And you've always inspired me with that, to be honest, Brian, because I know how enriched you are in your study and your research. And that's, I've got to say that I admire you for that. And I know you're big fans and students of the Deckers and the Holnagels and the Safety Differently movement. And it was always really great to see. And you've traveled the world. I know me and you spoke back when you were at ACOM in MENA. So now back in Australia, you know, where are you right now, you know, with your career, and you know, where do you see the next the future of your work within the profession down in Australia?
Yeah, look, it's been a heck of a journey, as you say. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I've gotten to see different things, different places around the world. There's a Led Zeppelin song called "The Song Remains the Same," and I think I could easily paraphrase it and say safety remains the same, kind of independently of where you go and what you do, because ultimately it's about fundamentally making sure people are okay, and organizationally and individually doing what needs to be done to ensure that when they're doing work, they do work in a way that doesn't harm them. So, yeah. Great career, turned 50, still dead keen to learn and keep developing. And I guess where I'm at and where I'd like to go, I think it's time for me to start to give back. I've seen a lot. I've seen some good. I've seen some bad. I've seen some horrible. And I think I'm probably at a stage now where hopefully just a few of the scars of battle and some of the learnings and maybe some of the successes along the way are things that I can guide and give to people, and you know, maybe they can take it on and do more exciting things.
So, I mean, you said, you know, some things have stayed the same. There is, you know, the point of the podcast is, I think we were talking this in the preamble before we went live with this, that I think, you know, one of the things that I've seen not being a safety professional is that there's, you know, not a lot is, you know, certainly on the topics and the content hasn't changed a lot in the past 10 years that I've been doing this. I get a sense that, you know, safety, the EHS space is just a little bit stuck, or is there an issue with these kind of echo chambers of conversations that are going on globally now? And is that holding us back from perhaps breaking through and sort of changing the face of EHS across the globe?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot in all of that, Paul. I think maybe the echo chamber reference first. I do get a little bit frustrated with that sort of circular debate safety people to safety people or safety person to safety person. We operate in a world that's very complex. Most of us work for organizations that are trying to turn themselves inside out to make a buck, to stay relevant. 20 years ago, nobody talked about climate. Nobody talked about social license to operate. Nobody talked about some of these themes that all of a sudden have just emerged and become massively important for organizations. So I think safety kind of needs to recognize its position, recognize its need to be kind of dynamic, flexible, adaptive, and people have to stop treating it as if it's like a very unique and special thing that can be treated in a special or different way to a lot of the other disciplines that go into, you know, making an organization successful. So yeah, less soapboxing and more active challenge of what needs to be done to keep people safe and ultimately what needs to be done to help our organizations make the right decisions, I think.
Yeah. And, it always seems to me that there's, safety being a top-down approach. You know, obviously, I think that more so now, I think there is a level of equality in the boardroom. There's certainly a level of understanding and people are starting to put, everybody, look, there's nothing wrong with making profit, right? There's absolutely, that's what we're all here for. But do you think there's been a transformation, an exciting change where now safety is starting to get discussed and prioritized within the board and on the boardroom, in the boardroom?
Oh, it's definitely more actively discussed than it was, say, when I started in my career. I think that there's a problem with the way it gets discussed. And I think the problem stems from the way safety people convey the message to boards. Like I have a very simple philosophy in and around how this should be conveyed to people that run companies. And I think you have to be very specific in and around the component part of safety that you're referring to when you engage with a board. And simply put, there's the kind of eradication of harm and preventing people from being hurt and managing that sort of workplace safety. Mm. There's the system product safety, which is all about organizational resilience and reliability and some of the sciences of high reliability organizations and normal accident theory and stuff like that. And then there's this new emerging theme that's really washed over all of us since the pandemic, which is the psychosocial risk, the sort of psychological health and safety component, and specifically, what is it about work, both the environment and the kind of place or the way that we do work that actually can affect people. And unless you go to the board and have that level of sophistication or at least clarity in the narrative, you run the risk of just generalizing this topic as, hey, safety people, you need to treat this importantly. You need to have a moral compass. You need to worry about it. But it won't necessarily make any kind of material difference unless safety, the board understands which part of it you want to engage with. And which part is more relevant or more material for their particular company.
Yeah. And I've seen this, and we're trying to thread the needle a little bit around Global Series at the moment, because there's a lack of, there's a need of actual fundamental selling of safety. We have to sell safety. Probably a large portion of our time is trying to sell our system to people, sell our theories to our staff, to our front line, to our board. Is that a skills gap in itself? I mean, not speaking of you specifically, but do you see that trend of perhaps a shortage in skills for being able to sell to your peers, to your boardroom, to your front line?
I think so. I think it comes down to comprehension first. What part of this message do you want to convey? Do you understand that there's actually different parts to this equation? And then depending on your audience, what part do you want to, convey? And then how do you want to convey that message? You may be in a board setting where it's, you know, more appropriate to align this to a business imperative, but you might be in a frontline setting where it's purely all about, you know, the moral commitment to send somebody home safe and well and look after them. But unless you understand that, and unless you understand your setting, and unless you understand what matters for the person that you're engaging with, you run the risk of just kind of motherhood and apple pie and a message that doesn't really, you know, resonate, or worse still, comes across as lacking in authenticity or lacking in kind of fundamental knowledge. So that would be my sort of, I think selling is maybe a word that could be interpreted incorrectly, but I think conveying the right message dependent on the people that you're engaging with and kind of what they need to hear is really the way to convey it.
Yeah, I think communication, you know, sort of enhanced comms, you know, being a good communicator is probably a better way of framing it rather than sort of saying it as selling. I guess, you know, the work that you've done, you know, I know you do a lot of work with Sydney, you've done papers for Eric, and, you know, I've read those, by the way, they're fantastic. You obviously have a motivation to make a difference to this profession. What, from your professional opinion, needs to change in safety if we are to break through? You know, if we look at the ILO report that's gone out, look, I know some of the major areas are some more economically developing countries where they don't have the money and the capabilities and the technologies to perhaps fast track. But let's be honest, right? There is, you know, there's a global responsibility in EHS that we all feel a part of in order to make a real difference. And we're still quite not breaking through that plateau. So, you know, what's your mission, and what do you think needs to change in safety to really make a difference?
Yeah, I might give you an example. It's something that kind of gets me quite fired up. But I remember being in Saudi Arabia a few years ago, and, you know, there's obviously, or there wasn't back then at least, any kind of regulatory framework in place. Notionally, you know, there's no sort of understanding of, I guess, the basic kind of health and safety rules, regulations and approaches that would exist, say, like somewhere in the UK, and lo and behold, when you engage with international companies in Saudi and you see what they're doing in the name of safety, the best they can come up with is to bring all the paraphernalia and crap that has been developed for 40 years in response to tight regulation and maybe even some of the political movements of neoliberalism, stuff like that. And you go, like, what's all this about? You know, ultimately, you've got a bunch of people that have been brought from their homeland to do work in a foreign country. There's no inhibitions whatsoever. You know, there's no reason as to why you just couldn't get rid of all that rubbish and go, what do I have to do from a very pure and basic sense to make sure that those people are looked after and cared for? And so I guess to answer your question directly, where you can and where the scenario, the situation or the environment allows, just get rid of all of the non-value add paraphernalia, because it is not proving to be, you know, beneficial. And there's plenty of people doing research and, you know, conveying plenty of information which suggests that it's doing the opposite. So, yeah, I think where you can, just be brave, think about what you're trying to do and not what you've done for 20 years, because that's kind of how it's always been. Not helpful. In fact, you see people operating in those domains and you go, you're spitting all of these things like checklists and paperwork and all, but you ask them why, they can't even convey in a logical sense why they're actually doing it. It's just become custom and practice and kind of muscle memory. And so, yeah, that would be my very simple, direct answer. Get rid of the paraphernalia, particularly in developing markets where you don't need to have it. There's no reason to have it.
I like the simplification, and I brought this up countless times that there's an element of overcomplication. If I'm trying to sell my guy, I remember, right, an old employer, I won't mention the names, that they brought in for the first, we were a paper and pen company, we're an old boiler room sales company. And I remember when they brought in a CRM system, right, for the first time. And look, and I get the benefits of CRM, I understand it, but all honesty, all it was used for was for senior management to report and make sure that we were working correctly, which was kind of an over micromanagement of their sales staff, which what we did, we rebelled. We didn't do it properly. We did it as an administrative task because we were forced to by senior management, but we did it reluctantly, and we did it with a level of, we just didn't care. We didn't do it correctly. We became unconsciously competent at doing it. We didn't really know what we were doing. We just forced our way to plug digits into a dashboard. And yeah, I think there's that element of ownership. Can we get people and places to own their responsibilities in safety? Can we make people, empower people to be, you know, to own safety, own their own safety? I said this before as well. It's like, you know, I'm not the most intelligent guy, but I am streetwise. I've managed to get through my life so far, touch wood, without harming myself or anybody else. So I take that as a win, you know? So that sort of stripping back and keeping things simple, is that it, or just stripping it back and not trying to turn a simple issue into a complex problem?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's get to the heart of what you're intending to do way before you kind of roll out four pieces of paper that are just tools or enablers of what it is you're trying to do. And then what happens is the paper becomes the thing, as opposed to, for example, you know, four checklists to approve a safe work method statement. That might be completely irrelevant in an environment where you literally could huddle with a supervisor and six workers, get a piece of paper out, draw some pictures around what it is we were going to, you know, somebody's going to do today, get positive affirmation coming back from people in terms of how they, you know, they understand what needs to be done. They understand the sort of, I guess, lines that can't be crossed. They understand if they're unsure what to do and how they can raise their hand. Like that, that's a much more real and conducive process to looking after people and keeping them safe than, you know, giving workers from a place where they probably can't even speak English six checklists to fill out because you think that's what's required. Yeah. So how we've gotten here, I don't know, but I think particularly in the developing markets, there's a massive opportunity to really break the mold there and do what matters, do what's right, not do what 25 years of regulation has kind of obliged us to do. And by the way, I shouldn't say that all of that's wrong or bad. It's not, but it has a place, and it has a context, and applying it in different places willy-nilly without giving due consideration to the environment and the sort of context you're in is crazy.
And so circling back as well to those kind of echo chambers, I'm going to go back to the, you know, the lot online, a lot of arguing, a lot of, it's not even debate, some of the stuff that I see for, you know, we're grown adults just arguing over stuff that, to be honest, is just, you know, not moving anywhere. Is there a utopian view to a lot of these particular theories is question number one. Or, you know, a lot of people are saying, especially within the podcast, that, you know, there's a different solution to a different issue, right? So, like, where do you sit on that? You know, what are your views?
Yeah, very much in the latter. I think each theory, each model, and each version of this probably has a relevance or a place depending on the situation that emerges. And there may be times where different parts of different elements can be fused together to create the answer that matters for the particular moment in time that you're dealing with. So my kind of response to it is it will be foolhardy to think in such a dynamic and adaptive and complex world that somehow one model, one principle, one message, you know, kind of overrides everything else. I mean, 2024, believing that to be the case, very disappointing, I would say.
If you were to give one piece of advice from your experience over the years to any of the listeners, in terms of, you know, some people are saying about doing things differently, some people are saying just more of the same, some people are saying that, you know, we're overcomplicating things. If you were to give one piece of advice to the EHS profession right here, right now, what would that be?
I would say make this relevant for the endeavor that you are working within. So that might be a company, that might be an industry, but don't operate on the business. Don't operate on a company. Don't operate on an industry. Operate within an industry, within a company, and within a business. And what I mean by that is hang off the different theories, the different concepts that you want to bring to life, off of existing ways of doing work, off of existing ways of how a business functions. Because in my 28 years, when I've had true deep success, it's been as a consequence of the goals of the business fully aligned with the goals of safety. And they became one. And anybody that suggests that these things need to run separately, or you know, there's a safety culture and there's a business culture, or there's a safety strategy and there's a business strategy, we're just perpetuating this view that you do business and then you do safety. Mm-hmm. My view would be you do business and safety is an inherent part of how you do business. And that works for injury management, harm prevention. It works for the more system, major catastrophic, high risk stuff, and it works for the psychological health and safety stuff. Because at the end of the day, this manifests through work and it manifests through what companies do. And if you don't hook it off of that, you're just, you know, perpetuating a distance between what work is and what safety is.
Love that. Okay, brilliant. Well, I've got one more sort of burning question, which we've asked all the listeners, and it's sort of tied into, you know, you actually mentioned that you're now in a position in your career where you want to give back, right? If I was to put it, you know, from leaving a legacy, right? One day we're going to retire. One day we're going to leave this all behind. And in that time frame, I'm a big believer, you know, Global Series, I want to be the nucleus of engaging conversations, innovative movements that can help play a pivotal role in changing and supporting the EHS profession. So if you were to say, I don't know, set retirement at 65, 70 years old, let's fast forward to that date. If you could have it your way and say that you had left a particular mark on your job, on your profession, what would that look like and why?
I would say that the concept of resilience and organizational resilience was more deeply and widely understood, and its relevance for this topic as a consequence of everything that I'm going to do in the next 10 to 15 years before I retire. Because I see resilience as critical in making sure that the companies do this right and the companies put in place things which prevent failures from occurring and ultimately from people being seriously hurt or killed. It's a difference. There's a difference between doing safety and doing resilient or resilience. Or said differently, a company can be safe and not resilient, but a company could also be resilient and not safe. So I want to completely immerse myself in the world of resilience and hopefully help people see the value it has and how it can prevent companies from having major failures. That's kind of my mission.
Love that. And keep an eye on, you know, we've been you know, very close with Brian over the years. We've been following a lot of the work that he does. We've been sharing a lot of the papers he's written. And we are always Global Series inspired and, you know, had that relationship for many years now. So he may be down in Australia, but I'm sure you can reach him on LinkedIn and, of course, touch base and get his views on how he's doing things differently and what he's done extremely well in his nearly 30 years of tenure as a senior EHS professional. But Brian, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on Changing Safety Podcast today. It's lovely to see you again. And you said 50, you don't look 50. If I look like you when I'm 50, I've done all right. I look about 60 and I'm 40.
Yeah, I feel 50 though, I'll tell you that, the last couple of years, wow. Yeah, you certainly feel it. May not look it, but I certainly feel it. I need to get more resilient. I think that's the...
There you go. There's always the rugby to fall back on, I suppose. But I don't know, Australia aren't what they used to be at the moment, I'll be honest.
No, I guess my original country of origin, Ireland, are sort of flying the flag. So I'll adopt the pattiness in me for that, for the Six Nations.
Hey, that's the beauty, right? You can flip from one to the other.
Absolutely.
Brian, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show.
Likewise, mate. Thanks very much, Paul. Lovely to see you.
Take care.
Cheers.
What a pleasure it's been to have Brian on the show today. Again, thank you. Tuning in from down in Australia. Brian's been a great friend to this business for many years and worked with us many, many times. And it's been a delight to chat with him. He's given some really good insights and realization to how we can be different and how we can sort of shape and be more dynamic as a profession. So thank you to Brian. Tune in next week as we go deeper into how we change safety now and into the future.